You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Now, folks, this is a moment I've been waiting for quite a while. Fred Penner is probably one of the most recognized names in the world of children's entertainment. However, he's so much more than that. Composer, actor, writer, author, TV host, an all-around nice guy. I'd like to find some dirt on the guy. I couldn't find anything. He's known as a gentle giant with an undeniable ability to make you feel good about yourself. And this musical master brings, it's got to be over 25 years of commitment, consistency, and depth to a career that skillfully blends the many genres of performing and communication. FredPenner.com is the website. And, well, as I said at the beginning, it's an honor. Fred Penner, thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, Drew. Afternoon. What time is it?
I don't know. Where are you? You're in Winnipeg?
Yes, I'm in Winnipeg.
Winnipeg is known as the mosquito capital of Canada. Is it still?
Well, you know, it says that, but I haven't noticed them too heavily this year at all. I've only seen a couple over the time. You know, it's bizarre. It'll come and go. I don't think it's really
assessment.
A fair statement of it. You know,
right.
We have our season, but it's not uncommon across the country.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show today is because you're coming up into my neck of the woods, the hometown. There's a community carnival on Saturday, June 19th, next Saturday, from 11 to 3. Admission
right.
is free with the registration at the gate. And, of course, Fred Penner live in concert at 1 o'clock.
Perfect.
So this is going to be quite a deal here, folks. The Salvation Army Church is putting it on in town. And if anybody's going to do it right, it's going to be these folks. So I'm glad you're coming.
Yeah, me too. There's a very nice connection with the folks there, and we've had lots of exchanges of emails, and I'm looking forward, and there apparently seems to be a little bit of excitement happening out there. So,
there's quite a bit of excitement,
I'm happy to get in on that.
Yeah, they've got an inflatable obstacle course, petting zoo, pony rides, carnival games, prizes, concession stand, and ladies and gentlemen, Fred Penner. Let me just say this again. Frederick Ralph Cornelius Penner.
Thank you. Not many people have said the entire handle. It takes up too much time.
Good night. What kind of a parent names their child Cornelius? Who does that?
Well, it's from the background. As you probably know, I'm from Mennonite background. My parents came from southern Manitoba, Winkler, Morden farming communities, and my paternal grandfather he was Cornelius. Cornelius Winters was his name, and my father's name was Edward. What does that have to do? We named our son Edward. It's all about passing on the names of a generation.
Right.
You know, just for connection, continual connection with family. So Frederick was my paternal grandfather's name. And actually, Grandpa Fred was one of the first counselors in this little farming community in Winkler. And my mother's father was Cornelius, and when I was born, my older brother was he was 9 years old, and he really liked the name Ralph.
Man.
I could think of a number of reasons why he might like that. But
but seriously, Fred, I mean, if your high school buddies at Kelvin High, if they ever found out about these names, you'd be beat up, wouldn't you?
I don't think so.
No?
There were a lot of Corneliuses around. That was not an uncommon name at all, certainly for the prairie here, because that is a German background handle. And so FRCP. I mean, the cool part of it was FRCP are my initials, which is the same as a fellow of the Royal College of Physicians.
Ooh.
So I'm
nice.
A good company.
So you put that at the end of your name. I like that. It's good. Fred, who had the greatest musical influence on you? I know your father was into classical music, like a good accountant.
Yes, indeed.
Your older brother and sister got into the early rock and in the folk music. Would you count them as being musical influences?
Well, it was the whole package. I was so I think blessed with that range of sound. I mean, having the swing music that my parents were into, as well as the classical, as well as the church music, and then into the 50s with those great, great bands that were coming up, the Four Lads, the Four Aces, the good harmony sounds that was just starting to build in that time, the doo-wop era. And then when the 60s came along, the whole folk scene, and the beautiful range of material and sound from that. So I've been really fortunate to have to be part of that generation, that post-war generation, the boomers, and introduced to this beautiful range of sound. And fortunately, my brain was pretty connected to the musical world. And so I remember all these pieces and try and bring them forward to the material that I do now.
Well, of course, not just music, but back in the mid-70s, you were doing a lot of theater work, Rainbow Stage. I mean, there was Hello, Dolly, Fiddler on the Roof, King and I, Death of a Salesman. But the role I really can't imagine you playing. You know where I'm going.
No, I'm not sure now.
Captain Hook?
Captain Hook. Oh, the best role ever.
Come on. How can Fred Penner play Captain Hook?
Our purity, me darling. it was perfect, actually, because it was maybe a little out of character. But I am a pretty good actor, even if I do say so myself. and the other side of the character was Mr. Darling, the father. So it was the dual role that's part of the whole thing.
Right.
And it was fun. It was I mean it's children's theater, so you can get. You can get really outside and be very very extreme in your portrayal of that, and people just appreciate it because they know that you're not a bad guy, and it was really a delight. I had a good time doing that.
One of our Facebook members, Grant Corvo, said on our Facebook group, "I recall Fred from his Winnipeg days with Cornstalk and Al Simmons."
Oh, we're digging again here. That was a major turning point in my musical life, certainly in the early 70s. I just finished University of Winnipeg with a BA in economics and a minor in psychology, and I really had no desire to go into either of those fields, but I had no idea what I was going to do, in my early 20s. Nobody had ever told me that I was good enough to even pursue a musical career. And my sister, who was a Down syndrome child, she passed away in the early 70s, and my father died a year later of cancer, and so I had these two mortality checks in a short period of time that really sort of shook up my world, obviously, and got me to a point of trying to analyze what is it that I want to accomplish in this world, and so I started pursuing music, which was the only thing that had given me. Really a sense of joy and fun, and because I was pretty good at it. But after doing that for a year or so, mutual connections led back to my old air cadet buddy, Al Simmons.
Hmm.
And Al had been in a number of rock bands in Winnipeg and was looking to put together a new group. And just through coincidence, we started playing and hit it off. And got some other friends. We had a bass player and a drummer, and I was on rhythm guitar, and Al did his whole world of very insane prop making, and we toured the country for 4 years. It was a wonderful spontaneous. It was like live comedy theater. We were billed as a comedy show troupe, and we had the best time going into the pub circuit. And just interacting and playing with the audience and getting people on stage, it was really a absolutely delightful part of my life those 4 years.
And then, of course, one day the cat came back on Sharon Lois and Bram's The Elephant Show, and the next thing you know, you're getting nominated for a bunch of Junos, you even win a couple, and then former Governor General Ray Natician is presenting you with the Order of Canada, 92.
Yeah, in 1992, my mom and I went down to Ottawa for that event, and it was I'm sure that every person who's ever received an Order of Canada, and I've heard interviews with amazing human beings who I have no question were absolutely the best candidates in their field to be nominated, but everybody comes out of that with this absolute sense of humility. You feel overwhelmed because you're in the company of people who are so great in their fields, but so humble at the same time. It's a very overwhelming experience, to be in that good company.
You know, when you do the research on that song, The Cat Came Back.
Uh-huh.
There's stuff there that people don't know about that song.
And maybe it should be left that
way.
Yeah,
let's just move along. I heard that you wrote about 50 songs in 3 months for TP Tales on APN Network.
I did. The TV series, TP Tales, was on for 3 seasons in the early part of this millennium. And every season had, how many shows did we do? 30, oh, golly. Yeah, I think there are 26 episodes per season.
Three songs a show?
And three or more, 3 to 5 songs a show at least. And I've learned how to write to task over the years. I'm a pretty spontaneous guy, so when you put me into a room and you give me these scripts, I just go into this zone and I'm able to like I was saying, bringing all those musical influences forward and write songs very quickly. So I wrote, I think in about a 24-hour period, around 50 tunes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it really was. I don't know where that comes from. You know, it feels like very much a spiritual, and you know, somebody's guiding my hand. The automatic writing thing happens. It was very, very powerful.
Do you ever find yourself cheating or slipping into creative apathy because of the assembly line blues?
Not really. The neat thing about the writing to task and writing to script is there is a section of the script where there's a little hole, a little vacuum that needs to be filled with something. And when you read the script, you know what the writer has come up with before, and you know what's coming after after this new song that's going to happen. So you automatically have trimmed off a whole bunch of potential information, and the bubble is just sort of waiting there to be burst and the song to come out. I find it actually quite easy because I know the characters of the show.
Yeah.
And I'm writing to the for these people.
Well, it's like a good comedy writer writing for the person playing that role.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean I've watched a lot of the sitcoms, and I've been jealous of that ability, certainly to write lines, but when you have a list of here are the characteristics of this person, you know, there's maybe a dozen things. He does this, she does that, she doesn't do that. So you just whittle it down,
yeah.
And then you find lines, you start putting them in situations, and how would so and so react in this situation?
Right.
And it's like I said, there's an interesting analogy. I don't know if you follow this or not, but there, Michelangelo sculpted a piece called The Captives. It's in, I think it's in Florence in Italy, in Firenze. And there's a huge piece of granite that has chunks sort of taken out of it, and it looks like there's arms or legs or parts of thighs and parts of faces that are trapped inside of this piece of granite. And it looks like there's so much energy, they're ready to sort of burst out of this piece of rock. And apparently when Drew was in Renaissance Italy, he asked Michelangelo, how did you do this? You know, as you're asking me how I do this.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelangelo said, all I did was cut away the pieces that didn't belong.
Right.
You know, and the pieces that don't belong have already been removed
yeah.
when you're working on a script. So it's, you know, so suddenly it's there, and it's quite an amazing process.
But has Fred Penner ever written a song that he now looks back on and cringes?
Not really. When I sit down, I know who my I know who my audience is, and I think I'm pretty clear on that. I don't write for the child, actually. I write for the person. Because everybody, you know, no matter what age you are, has the same core of value. You know, you all have the same, essentially the same needs and wants and love and encouragement and communication and those human values are part of everybody. So if I write to a universal topic, then you know, with the elements, you know, some repetition, some chorus, some verse, carrying it through a range, then it fits into my definition of the value of music.
Hmm.
So, sometimes I've written things and I've gone to them after and that, you know, it's not a great melody. It's not really a powerful chord progression. It's not going to be my defining song.
Yeah.
But then you never write a gem every time. You do what you do and hope that some of them rise to the surface.
LA Parent Magazine called you the Canadian Minister of Positivity.
Isn't that nice?
Well, look, I remember interviewing a fellow named Michael Clemens. Pinball is his name. He would play.
Oh yeah, Pinball Clemens.
Yeah, and the first thing I needed to say to him was, "Come on, please tell me you've lost your mind at one. You've been so angry that you've just turned into an irrational jerk." Fred Penner, I ask you the same question: have you ever just lost it? You have four children.
Oh yeah. I've lost it with the kids. Absolutely. You know, when you have four children, and they start testing you and putting you through their paces. I remember times, you know, when the kids were younger and they're sitting in the back seat of the car and they start yelling at each other and arguing as I'm trying to drive from one place to another.
He touched me. Yeah, stop touching me.
Oh my goodness. And I've pulled over to the side of the road and was tempted to leave them on the street corner for at least a few minutes so they had some panic in their lives that I was serious about what I was doing. You know, I do have moments where I get angry in situations. I get angry at drivers who just yesterday I was walking our dog, and we have a four-way stop on our street corner, and we're in a residential district in Winnipeg, and it's sometimes it gets busy and sometimes it gets quiet, but these stop signs, and there's lots of kids around, and I'm walking the dog across the street, and I see a car coming down the road, and he's moving pretty quickly, and I just get to the other side, and he doesn't stop at the stop sign.
Oh.
He just barrels right through, and I turned around and I yelled at him. This is 9 o'clock yesterday morning.
Now, did Fred Penner flip the bird?
No, there was no bird flipping that ring, but certainly
I thought I had a scoop here in the Drew Marshall Show.
the expression on my face was certainly worth the price of admission. I think.
Oh my goodness! What about bloopers? Any bloopers from the show that you remember? Any maybe horrific accidents climbing out of the hollow log?
Here's the best. Not quite a blooper, but a little game that was played on me. The lighting director for Fred Penner's place, and we did 13 seasons, almost 1,000 episodes, so we knew each other pretty well and played off each other,
yeah.
You know, the crew and performers. And Gunther Zimmer was the lighting director in Vancouver, and Gunther was from Austria, and his family harbored Jews during the Second World War, so he did not have any use for Nazis. Because who does with that?
Who does?
but he would take any opportunity to play with that a little bit. He had a great sense of humor. He was always up and laughing. So the very last episode, I think in 1992 or 3 or something like that, we were all really tired. It had been a long run. We were at the very last episode of one season. And we were all anxious to get this show in the can and everybody get home to their loved ones. And I crawl through the log. You know, I know exactly what I'm doing. I know all the songs. There's no guests that I have to deal with. So it's just through, talk, sing, story, goodbye, take good care of each other. We're out of here. And I crawl through the log. And I get my guitar and I say, "Hi, everybody. I know it's going to be a great day. Here we go." And all of a sudden, I hear something behind me, and my brain is sort of kinked for a minute because this is on television.
Yeah.
And I thought, what's going on here? And I turned around, and Gunther, unbeknownst to most of the crew, had gone down to wardrobe, had rented a German SS uniform. he crawls through the log. He looks at me. He looks around and he says, "Is the war over?" And we're on the floor.
Oh my goodness!
It was just a and it just lightened everything up again.
Yeah.
We had a great last show.
For some reason, I can imagine Tim Conway doing that.
Perfect.
Right?
Absolutely. That's
You're,
I can see him doing that too.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, was there Ernie Coombs ever on your show? Did you ever have him as a guest?
Yeah. Oh, Ernie, that was probably the most intense. Let me tell you another story about that. Ernie's wife was tragically killed by a car
that went up on the sidewalk, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were shopping in Toronto.
And by the way, folks, we're talking about Mr. Dress-Up, if you don't know the name Ernie Coombs.
Ernie Coombs. I was on his show for a couple of episodes, and he came on mine. And his wife had been tragically killed. Taxi jumped the curb and smacked right into her.
Oh.
Less than 2 weeks later, he was supposed to be doing our show. And so we called him immediately and sent our condolences and said, don't worry, we'll reschedule, we'll do that.
Sure.
And he said, she would really have wanted me to do this. I've been looking forward to being on your show and all of that.
Wow.
So he's the consummate professional. And so he came on the show and the level of respect that was given for him as Mr. Dress-Up, I mean, everybody knew him and loved him, as their favorite uncle. So on top of this, with his wife, he just had the love was surrounding him, and he was in this beautiful bubble of support. And we started going to the show and having a good time. And I hadn't thought the whole thing through right to the end, but at the last song we did was a Tom Chapin tune called "Together Tomorrow."
Oh, wow.
And so there we are sitting in front of the log on the thing, and then the chorus went, together tomorrow again. Tonight when I'm sleeping, I'll dream of us being together tomorrow. And
how did he handle that?
Oh, the two of us were sitting there. And our eyes were filling up, and we this was the last tune, so we made it through, and I sang the Take Good Care of Each Other, and that was it. But it was the singularly most emotional moment I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
Really.
Wow.
Very, very powerful.
Chatting with Fred Penner here on the show, of all of the Canadian-produced children's shows over the years, which ones do you think were the most successful?
You're asking me that?
Yes. Because, look, yours, that's a moot point. Next, let's move on. Was Fraggle Rock, was that Canadian?
Absolutely.
The Friendly Giant?
Yeah, Friendly Giant. Actually, and Mr. Dress-Up was actually an American. He was from Pittsburgh, and he worked with Fred Rogers.
Right.
As a puppeteer on Fred Rogers' show.
Can I just say, the puppets on Mr. Rogers were horrifying.
Yeah.
They terrified me.
Sure.
They were just, I don't know, they were, paper mache, wrinkly, it was like, never mind.
Yeah. I never met Mr. Rogers, but he, if we have time, I'll tell you a story about him. But
what about Hilarious House of Frightenstein?
Oh, brilliant. I mean, Billy Van. He was so irreverent. That was never really... Well, was that a children's? That was.
It was sort of.
That was in another, in its own genre.
Its own genre.
My son is 28, and he is a huge Frightenstein fan. So we got him the box set.
Yeah.
Exactly.
My assistant gave that to me for Christmas.
Billy was great. He was a really good actor, and he just brought some bit of. It's all about fun. And he would once in a while get into, some little political things along the way, and his little asides were great.
Yeah.
That was a classic show. The Shay and Len, going back into the early generation of mine, Helene, I forget her last name, but she was a French Canadian lady who did her show in English with Petit Peu de Français aussi, and that was a wonderful show. I remember that, and I remember Razzle Dazzle with Michelle Finney and forget the man's name. The husband of Three's Company, the blonde.
Oh, of Chrissy Snow. Well, I mean, no. Suzanne Summers.
Yes, right. Her Suzanne Summers' husband was the The male character on Razzle Dazzle in the 60s.
Wow.
This is going back. And, you know, wonderful actor. Great show. Maggie Muggins was classic for me in those days. I don't think the shows now, I mean, I'm a little chagrined by where most of the networks are going for children's television, because it all seems to be very, very hyped and artificial and
poppy.
And they're not allowing the child to sort of come in and explore at their energy. It's all about going out and grabbing them and giving them their little 15-second sound bites. And it's all about overwhelming and not engaging and bringing in.
Brilliant assessment.
You think?
Oh, that was spot on.
I mean, that's the sense that I get, and that's what I fight with, you know, in my performance. Because when I do concert, it's all about trying to create the balance and the flow. So I'll get a good energy going, and then I'll bring it down and do something a little quieter, and so there's a real energy that moves throughout the audience, and you can feel the engagement happening there. I'm not trying to with decibels or with volume.
Yeah.
You know, trying to draw them in so they stay with me. I'm trying to do it with some, hopefully, some degree of intelligence and honesty.
Well, with your degree in psychology and your work with mentally and physically challenged children, of course, stemming from growing up with a sister with Down syndrome, I mean, Fred, you're like the Patch Adams of music.
Well, I know the value of music. I know the importance of and the lifelong value of what this is. I mean, interesting, Drew, is the last the generation who first grew up with me in the 80s are now in their 20s plus.
Yes.
Many are having their own children, and those families are coming back to concerts, but many of them are at university, you know, building their careers, trying to figure out where they're going. And so what I've been doing in the last while is going back to campuses, and I'm sometimes playing the homecoming events or orientation week, things like that, or even going into the pubs and doing a 10 o'clock at night performance, and that is something to write home about. It's unbelievable doing, you know, 500 kids in a pub setting, which I haven't played since the 70s in Cornstalk days, and these kids want to hear the songs that they grew up with. they don't want the ear splitting, loud and booming music. They want something that they can really hold on to, and they want The Cat Came Back, and they want Sandwiches, and they want, you know, Even There Was an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly. You know, and it's the, you know, my brain goes into a little bit of a kink when I see that, and it's but I understand it.
Yeah.
Totally, because what they are connecting with is their personal foundation. You know, they've passed through those teens. They're now young adults, and jumping back to the things that really had power and influence in their lives, and they're relatching hold of that. And it's like there have been a number of psychologists over the years who have talked about reconnecting with your inner child thing. I mean, that's a whole study on its own.
Sure.
And I think that's what people want. They don't want to lose that vulnerability. They don't want to lose that joy of childhood. But you get trapped in your, you know, the busyness of life, trying to raise children, trying to make a career happen, you know, and the cutthroat world that becomes. You know, you pull away every once in a while and just remember what it was like to be a beautiful, vulnerable, sensitive human being when you were a child, you know.
Mm.
Go back.
Again, very, very well said. I'm actually listening to the interview for a change. Fred Penner on the show. We're just about running out of time with both he and the show, so let me move along here. I gained more understanding about the importance of music through Susie than through any other human being, because she loved music in the purest sense.
Yeah.
How old were you when your sister died, Susie? She was around 12. How old were you?
Yeah, when she died, I was 21.
Okay. And then your father died the year later.
Yeah, 1 year after. Yeah, He'd been quite ill for years.
You know, with your sister's death followed closely by your father's death, I would imagine that that scenario, that season, would be the greatest source of pain in your life.
Absolutely. You know, it's mortality at its purest form.
So did it? I mean, those moments tend to cause people to search spiritually sometimes.
Yeah.
Did that happen to you? And again, you let me know that you've come from a Mennonite background. You were raised in a Protestant environment.
Yeah.
You started going to some Baptist churches in your youth because your oldest sister followed that path, married a Baptist minister.
Exactly. Yeah, and their calling took them to Emo, Ontario, and Fort Francis area, and then up to Flin Flon, Manitoba. They had their ministry going there for many years. Yeah, when that happened, I mean, there was no blaming happening. You know, how could God do this to such a beautiful child? you know, I never got to that world of self pity or whatever that would be called. I understood why they went. I mean, I suppose if it had been accidental, you know, I may have dug a little deeper to try and find you know, the spiritual side of it. But Susie, we knew that she would not survive past puberty, basically, because of her heart murmur and the poor quality of her blood. You know, as a blue baby, she, you know, her organs could not stand having, you know, having impure blood. Well, you know, whose could?
Right.
And my father was you know, was quite ill for many years, and that was tragic. But ultimately, you know, it was those were moments that I did have to go through a process of certainly acceptance and understanding and the spirituality of my world here. I mean, knowing the range of contact that I've been allowed to have over the time, and going to Africa with World Vision and the connections that have happened there live, and that have happened since then, of people who have come to me and say, you know, I saw you on that program and I am now sponsoring a child because of that, because I sensed the, you know, the energy and the value and the spirituality that was existing there. You know, so then you start putting yourself into another life perspective of realizing that, and this is for everybody, not for me, but everybody has that potential of making a difference in the lives of another human being from a very spiritual point of view, if you bring the honesty and the courage and the strength and the, you know, and the humility into the mix, and approach things from a sensitive level, so that there's an understanding that we are ultimately all in this together. I do feel that I am my brother's keeper. I got a lot of this from my mother when she passed away, at, you know, 5 years ago at 92 glorious years.
Wow.
She would one of the songs that she wanted played at her funeral was called "If I Wounded Any Soul," and it's a And I feel that I try desperately to not hurt feelings. You know, I mean, I lose sometimes, as we all do, but I understand the importance of trying to be as, you know, I was going to say pure, but that's not really the word, but trying to be as honest and forthright as you can. And I consider that to be a huge part of my spirituality, is that
so
energy.
So what labels are we going to try to hang on Fred Penner today? But spiritually, I mean, you know, have you landed, you know, what, I guess, you know, sometimes people just want to know flat out, what have you done with Jesus, or what have you done with Buddha, or what, you know, where are you at?
You know, I've had a really hard time putting any label on it, because I believe in one God, and I believe all the gods are the same. I believe Allah is Buddha, is Jesus, and, you know, I'll maybe get in trouble for that. No, but well, we're, you know, it's all.
Who's going to get you in trouble for that?
I don't know. I mean, this, some people don't think that.
Yeah. So.
You know. Well, really, I guess, you know. I mean, and I don't really care if people don't believe that, but I believe in the power of of humanity. I believe in the power of spirituality, and if however you define that path, you know, I believe we do need a definition of God, whoever you feel that entity is, and I sense that, I feel that on a regular basis, you know, when I am in, you know, what I told the kids when we were growing up, you know, because we didn't specifically talk Jesus or God or what are spiritual things. My kids went to a Mennonite school, so they got that world, you know, in real understanding. But I would tell the kids, you know, how do we define it? When you do something, when somebody says something to you that makes you feel absolutely joyful and happy inside, you know, if somebody comes and puts their arm around you and says, "Drew, that picture you drew was Drew. That picture that you created is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Good for you. You know, I'm so proud of you for doing that." Mm-hmm. And suddenly your spine straightens up, and you feel a warmth coming through you. And I believe that is a spiritual moment. I believe that is the spirit moving through you.
Well, the risk of sounding a little like Bono, that's love, and God is love. So, I mean, can we not boil it down to something like that?
Perfect.
I got to say, well, we've just flat out run out of time. Obviously, you and I could rattle on incessantly about all sorts of things. I hope, and maybe you've connected already, but I hope you connect at some point in time with a fellow named Steve Bell out there in Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah, Steve's a good friend. I know Steve well.
Good, good.
Yeah, isn't he something?
Oh, all the time in the world for that guy.
God. Yeah, Steve is an absolute rock in this world.
He's
so clear and so strong, and his material is stellar.
Well, if anybody's going to be a decent representative of Jesus, now he would cringe if I said this probably because he's so stinking humble, but I would not put myself in that category. Follow me around long enough and you will be thoroughly disappointed in the Jesus stuff that I'm into. But he's on it, man. He really is.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not interviewing Steve Bell. We're interviewing Fred Penner.
Well, a mutual admiration there. We're good friends.
Mate, I hope God reveals himself to you in such a really cool way. Because I don't know, there's something about that 65 mark that messes with some people's heads, and
I'll look forward to it.
Well, you will become more. See, the great thing about being in the business that you're in, you're not going to lose your relevance. You just become more endearing.
No, I'm so pleased that I've been allowed to follow this path.
Because it
doesn't show any signs of stopping. You know, it takes a little tangents along the way. But it's like the foundation, you know, and foundation certainly is a strong spiritual word. But the foundation for me is absolutely solid, and as long as health and creativity in that order is maintained, then you go forever.
Brilliant, Fred. Listen, from a stay-at-home father for 4 years who tried to do his best raising the kids, I want to thank you for injecting into my children's life. Thank you.
Very kind of you, Drew. My honor.
Thank you. Fred Penner on the Drew Marshall Show. Bless you, mate.
Thank you, Drew.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Well, we're out of time. Wow. That was a thrill for me. Fred Penner. Who'd have thunk? Folks, thanks for tuning in. All of our show will be loaded up on our website by next week sometime. DrewMarshall.ca. You can listen to the entire thing again. But in the meantime, do me a favor. If you're new to the country, stay out of the left lane. Bye-bye.
The cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. They thought he was a goner, but the cat came back. He just couldn't stay away.
Hey everyone, this is Drew Marshall. Look, I just wanted to let you know about a brand new advertising opportunity here on The Drew Marshall Show. Every August, we replay the best celebrity interviews of the year, and our regular advertising partners absolutely love it because our listenership goes through the roof. Well, this August, we thought we'd offer a special deal for everyone. Imagine your organization, business, or charity's commercial being played right alongside back-to-back celebrity interviews with the likes of Larry King or hockey legend Paul Henderson or the star of CBC's The Dragon's Den, Brett Wilson, or wrestling's Jesse Ventura. Man, we've got so many to choose from. So here's the deal. We'll offer you 16 commercials, which we'll produce, and an advertisement on our website, all of which would typically go for about $800. But you get it for only $4.95 plus tax. Now, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I think that's about a 40% savings. So become an August advertising partner with The Drew Marshall Show. 16 commercials and an advertisement on our website for only $4.95 plus tax. That's 40% off. Folks, you'd better get on this soon because spots are limited and this offer ends July 17th. So call 905-845-2821 extension 367. That's 905-845-2821 extension 367. Or contact us at drewmarshall.ca.